welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, the Kodiak Island Borough School District is considering three finalists as it continues its search for its next superintendent.
We have had 21 applications. We hope to identify three finalists at that meeting and then move on from there.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at kodiakhealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
2025 was another year of growth for Alaska's mariculture industry, with more oysters and kelp harvested around the state. KMXT has more takeaways from a recent McKinley Research Group report. For the second year in a row, a coalition of mariculture interests has hired the McKinley Research Group to compile data and research about the state of Alaska's mariculture industry. On the kelp side, the report estimates 240,000 pounds of seaweed were harvested in Alaska last year. That's 85,000 pounds more than in 2024. In part, that's due to the growing number of kelp hatcheries in the state, which rose to 7 by the end of 2025.
We're seeing seed spools that are coming out that look brown and healthy and full.
That's Melissa Good, a mariculture specialist with the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center.
So... hopefully we got over a big hurdle with all of this effort, and we're going to be a little bit more successful in our seed quality.
According to the McKinley Research Group's report, a record amount of Alaska kelp-seeded line was sold last year. Those seed lines, typically held in spools of nylon twine, are placed underwater to grow out into mature kelp on aquatic farms. And kelp farmers reported fewer issues with seed quality last season compared to the 2023 to 2024 season.
And it's really been a capacity issue. And across the state, we have seen seed failures. It's a brand new industry. Everyone's kind of, you know, jumping in with not a lot of training, like hands-on training to operate these.
However, Good says kelp hatcheries seemed more successful in 2025 than they did in previous years. Last August, the newest of Alaska's kelp hatcheries opened inside of the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center. It was designed and built by a nonprofit called Green Wave, which trains and supports regenerative ocean farmers in coastal communities around the country. Green Wave also created a kelp hatchery manual of sorts last year. As for where this kelp is going, the report, backed by the Alaska Mariculture Cluster, found that the market for using seaweed to help plants on land grow better expanded rapidly for Alaska kelp last year. Companies in California, British Columbia, and Ketchikan purchased Alaska-grown seaweed in 2025 to make the products known as biostimulants. Researchers also cited a 2023 World Bank report that projects the value of the seaweed biostimulant market will be nearly $2 billion by the year 2030. Good says if the Alaska mariculture industry wants to grow sustainably and keep increasing its market share, then it will need more than just farmers.
With a growing industry, with kelp farming and oyster farming, we are going to need scientists, right? We're going to need managers. We're going to need scientists. We want to move forward sustainably. And so we need people on that side as well. And the more farms we have, the more people we have to have on the science and management side.
By the end of 2025, there were 43 proposed aquatic leases for kelp farms, oyster farms, or a combination across the state in the permitting phase. Pending and existing aquatic farms could cover up to 2,000 acres of state waters, mostly in southeast. In other news, the fishing industry group Alaska Groundfish Data Bank has closed its doors after nearly 40 years of representing trawl catcher vessels and processors in the Gulf of Alaska. As KMXT reports, the Kodiak-based organization revolved around one person for most of its lifespan. Since 1986, the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank has been the central member-based organization in Kodiak, gathering fisheries data from and advocating for policy for the Gulf of Alaska pollock trawl fleet. Julie Bonney joined the data bank as an analyst 5 years after it started.
And I thought it would be a good entry-level position. And if you really know the fishing industry right now, the vast majority of people that are involved have been observers in terms of scientific folks or leads for advocacy groups. Pretty much everyone I can think of or was an observer at one point or another.
After being an analyst with the organization for a decade, Bonnie took over as the head of the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank in 2001. But after roughly 35 years with the group, Bonnie says the data bank has closed its office in downtown Kodiak and is phasing out all of its operations.
Basically, we're spinning off responsibilities and winding down. And so there are a couple things that I will continue in 2026.
She will continue to work out of her home this year to close out some lingering projects, such as a research program with Alaska Pacific University. She's the wife of a longtime seafood processor and says she's always been interested in fisheries data. Bonnie has run the cooperatives for the Central Gulf of Alaska Rockfish Program since 2007 and was heavily involved in starting the electronic monitoring program for the Gulf's pollock trawl fleet. That policy went into effect last year. Last fall, the data bank requested that someone else take over those two service contracts. Even though the fishermen and shoreside processor cooperatives will still exist and the electronic monitoring program will continue for trawlers in the Gulf of Alaska, Bonnie says there isn't another organization that can solely fill the data bank's role in Kodiak.
Honestly, it's the only organization that includes both processors and harvesters in the same under the same tent.
Bonnie says she made the decision last summer to close the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank by the end of 2025 and transition into retirement. But while the data bank was preparing to close, the organization was caught up in an Alaska State Troopers investigation into seafood processors allegedly profiting illegally from salmon and halibut bycatch. According to reporting from the Northern Journal, in November, troopers seized Bonnie's work laptop and cell phone, along with all electronics and fisheries data from the Kodiak organization. No charges have since been filed against Bonnie or the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank. Bonnie says she cannot comment on the investigation as it's still ongoing, but she maintains that she's done nothing wrong.
I'll continue to defend myself, obviously, because I've done nothing wrong, but that's going to take a while to get to the other end.
While the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank phases out of the Kodiak fishing community, local trawl vessels will be heading out in the Gulf of Alaska for the start of the pollock A season after January 20th. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey. This next story comes from our colleagues at KUCB Radio. The Alaska seafood industry has historically relied on workers from beyond the state's borders, and for processors in the pollock industry, the nation's largest fishery, that has included a foreign workforce to help fill employment gaps in the past. But as KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports, recent changes in the seafood industry and federal immigration policies have some processors looking closer to home to fill those jobs.
It's safe to say that in Alaska, the fish far outnumber the people. Last year, fishermen harvested over 1 million metric tons of pollock in the state. That's a lot of fish, and it's just one sector of Alaska's seafood industry. Brian Gannon is the vice president of Global Partnerships for LaborMex, a company that helps match foreign workers with businesses across the U.S. He says when it comes to handling and packaging all that fish, especially cod and pollock, Alaska really has no local workforce.
For 100 years, people have been coming from somewhere else to process fish in Alaska.
Processing fish involves long hours and often tough, repetitive, and pungent work. There's an entire area of plants often referred to as the slime line, after all, so it can be tough to fill those jobs. Gannon, who started his career at a processing plant in Chignik in 1990, says despite the lackluster appeal of processing work, Alaska has done a good job attracting seasonal workers from afar.
Alaska is really a poster child for foreign labor in as much as the oil industry and forestry and mineral extraction and seafood production, et cetera, in Alaska for 150 years has been built on a small amount of available local labor and a large amount of labor coming from somewhere else.
The Alaska pollock industry directly employed over 8,000 workers in 2023, according to a report from Northern Economics. Most were workers from the U.S., and about 12% were residents of other countries. Gannon says about 10 years ago, the pollock industry's domestic workforce sort of ran dry. He says the industry's pool of workers that would come to the Aleutians to work part of the year wasn't replenishing, and companies couldn't match the shortfalls.
And that's where that H-2B visa came in quite handy.
The H-2B visa program allows employers to bring foreign workers to the U.S. to fill temporary non-agricultural jobs during shortages. And for a while, those visas, while complicated to obtain, worked well. But Gannon says over the past several years, a lot has changed in the pollock industry.
So many things have upended the apple cart, and the pollock processors are not necessarily producing as much.
Gannon says things like the COVID-19 pandemic, the war in Ukraine, changes in the nation's political dynamics, and competition from Russia and China have made it hard for pollock processors to make ends meet. The seafood industry in general has seen increases in processing costs, wages, energy prices, as well as drops in sale prices for every major species group in 2023. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Tom Enlow is the president and CEO of Unisea Seafoods, Unalaska's largest seafood processor. He says the company is feeling those pressures, and as a result, they're moving away from the H-2B visas to save money on an unreliable system.
The H-2B program, I think, was good for Alaska at a time when we really needed them, you know, during the pandemic and a little bit pre-pandemic. But really, it's cost prohibitive to bring workers all the way from Eastern Europe to Alaska.
Enlow says the processing plant moved back to a 100% domestic workforce. He says the main reason for that is cost. He says the Trump administration's approach to hiring foreign workers has also made a difficult and expensive process even more complicated.
You don't know for sure if you're going to get a supplemental visa, if it's going to get approved in time, or if they're going to be in Alaska when you need them as the season started.
Enlow says Unisea started participating in the H-2B program in 2019. Prior to that, the company employed 100% U.S. domestic workers, he says. Unisea isn't the only regional processor filling jobs with American workers. Trident Seafoods, one of the largest seafood processors in the nation, says it employs almost an exclusively domestic workforce. Enlow says Unisea won't be saving much, if any money, right away by switching back to an American workforce because he's expecting a high attrition rate.
And so you're going to need to, you know, hire more and bring up more people than you actually would need over time because you're going to lose some of those workers.
But he says that should eventually be offset by avoiding uncertainties around international travel and immigration concerns. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
And our top story for this week, the Kodiak Island Borough School District's Board of Education has narrowed its search for its next superintendent to three finalists. KMXT has more on who's on the short list to lead the school district later this year. The school board started with nearly two dozen applicants. Here's school board president Carrie Irons during the board's January 5th work session.
We have had 21 applications, and we will have this meeting on Thursday. We hope to identify three finalists at that meeting and then move on from there.
That was last week. After a special meeting on Thursday, the board narrowed that list down to Miranda Baca, Daniel Brigman, and Kim Hanisch. According to a press release from KIBSD, Miranda Baca is the current academic principal at Mount Edgecombe High School, the state-run boarding school in Sitka. It's had staffing and other issues of late. Still, an Alaska professional organization for secondary school principals recognized Baca as a regional principal of the year for 2026. She was also previously a math teacher at Kodiak High School. Daniel Brigman was most recently the superintendent of Avery County Schools in North Carolina from 2020 to 2024. He abruptly left the position at the end of October 2024 after agreeing to a $300,000 buyout with the local Board of Education, according to reporting from the Avery Journal-Times. The Board of Education did not give an explanation for the separation with Brigman and said it would not disclose any details because it was a personnel matter. Brigman has more than two decades of experience as a superintendent across several states. However, he has no Alaska experience. As for Kim Hanisch, she is currently the superintendent of the Unalaska City School District, but announced she would be resigning in June due to personal and professional reasons after 2 years on the job. She is also a finalist to be Cordova School District's next superintendent, according to reporting from the Cordova Times. Hanisch was the director of instruction for KIBSD from 2016 to 2019. Kodiak's current superintendent, Cindy Mika, announced in October that this school year would be her last on Kodiak Island. She said she's leaving for personal reasons unrelated to the job.
I love living here. I love this community, and it will always have a deep place in my heart, mine and my son's.
The KIBSD school board took applications for Micah's replacement from November 26th through January 2nd. The board has invited all three finalists to visit Kodiak later this month to tour the school district, meet with community members, and interview with the board in person. The board plans to make a final decision on January 23rd. The new superintendent is expected to start working for KIBSD on July 1st. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in.